Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the February 26 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. In this half hour, we'll talk about the marketplace with Bill Gentry. He's at Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Aaron Curtis of Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. And Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can find all of our programming at WILLAG.org. If you have not yet, you can also find a way to purchase your tickets for All Day Ag Outlook to be held at the Beef House Tuesday, March the 10th in Covington, Indiana. More than a dozen analysts and three special keynote addresses, all on commodity markets and agriculture, just $25. Tuesday, March 10th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We hope to have you there. Buy your tickets at willag.org or by dialing this number, 217-333-7300. Now, let's begin our program with AgriVisor's Dale Durkles, Risk Management Commodities' Bill Gentry, and of course, Aaron Curtis of Midco. Let's start with you. What are the things on your list to discuss this week?
Well, I guess in our world, at least in the elevator world, is just kind of wondering when farmers are going to start unloading some of this corn. We still have a lot of corn left to sell here as we old crop corn as we move through half the marketing year now. So the question is going to be when some of this starts to kind of get moved out of producers' hands.
Dale Durkles?
I guess two things are really on the docket at the moment. One of those is the evolution of the ongoing Brazilian truck strike and how that may unfold on. And the other thing is the number of acres farmers are going to plant this spring. I still think that's going to be a key item going forward.
And Bill Gentry.
I think maybe trying to see if the market doesn't want to pick up a more normal technical type behavior, because we seem to have been very, very choppy for the last couple of months.
All right, let's talk first about farmers in the United States and whether they will move corn at any point. You're probably in the best position, I suppose, Aaron, to think about how much they have moved in at least your area, how far behind they might be, reasons that the bin doors are closed. What are you hearing from them?
Well, we got some elevator customers that say that, you know, they got upwards of 70% of their corn left to buy, you know, especially as we move farther to the northern part of the corn belt. So that's at this point of the year more than normal. Farmers continue to be very reluctant in moving corn. We did see some cash beans move this week on the rally above $10 cash. So that's probably going to continue to meet some of their money needs here as we move into the springtime. You know, some talk that probably needs some money here around the first part of March. So it sounds like the bean selling could kind of solve some of those needs here. And farmer continues to be very reluctant to move cash corn, and that continues to keep basis level somewhat supported for this time of year, especially considering just the size of the crop. But that reluctance from the farmer to be a consistent seller here as we move through this second part of the marketing year continues to keep basis somewhat supported, and that continues to be the question here as we count down one day closer to harvest of 2015, continue to push that window even tighter of some of this stuff that's going to have to move here to get ready for this fall once again, Todd.
Dale Durkles, if Aaron's numbers are correct and there's 70% of the crop left to buy, that would be an exact or pretty close to an inverse of what normally would have been marketed for the year. Whether that's it's that great or a number smaller than that, I don't think matters so much, other than it is a number that is smaller than what most had expected to be marketed by this time under regular seasonal sorts of functions put forth by USDA at Ag Forum and counted for each and every year. Should farmers really consider how much grain other than their own is left out in the marketplace when they begin thinking about the rest of the old crop marketing plans? And does that mean they need to sell sooner rather than later?
Well, I think really the trick is, just like on a lot of years when you're working with a big crop and the harvest passed, is that, you know, the tricky point comes not necessarily at the moment yet. We will have probably a pickup in some selling either here and now or over the next couple of weeks still with some March bills being due. But then we always typically see that cash activity dries up as we get into April and on into May. And I think that will probably have been, again, be the case this year. I don't know that it's really going to see a flood. But the real key is, you know, once we get into the spring months, then it's more tricky because you got to beat the rush with whatever cash selling comes or might come in the summer months themselves as farmers and elevators, et cetera, start to clean the bins to get ready for the new crop. But one thing Aaron didn't mention, you know, as far as the commercial clientele are concerned, I mean, look at the carry you still got in the market. So if you're an elevator and you have room in the elevator to store, you got 8 cents from May to July, so to speak. And so, you know, I think some of the elevators, as long as it's good quality corn, they got room to hold it. Probably if they buy cash from the farmer, going to turn around, hedge the stuff, and set and collect some more storage income on it going forward too. So, you know, it could be a little negative to the board, but I don't know that it's necessarily going to be that bearish to the base.
So does that mean that we have double the pressure or more pressure once we get into the June, July period and people begin really to think about cleaning out bins?
From our perspective, it does look like that as a rising opportunity or a rising possibility, because you really have a compressed market scenario where old crop and new crop both basically become available to the market at the same time, and it almost becomes a double whammy. And all the guys that have been storing for higher prices that they've become accustomed to over the last couple of years have that realization that it may not come to them. And basis so far has not been all that stellar in many areas.
Well, you know, the one thing that happens if that does play out is that, you know, it still puts the corn in the commercial's hand. You've already seen the pressure on the board. The real negatives of that is really on the basis levels driving into the summer months themselves, especially as you get deeper into the summer. But we've also got to remember, once we end up in that period of time, then we got to start talking about the other factors that come into the play too. Basically, tell me about the new crop, because that really becomes a large impact on what old crop markets do.
Yeah, so how quickly do you think, Aaron, do we change from old crop fundamentals to new crop fundamentals for corn and or for soybeans in this year, given the amount of corn that may stay in storage for a lengthy period of time?
Well, I think from a future standpoint, I think we're beginning to already see some of that transition. You know, we move into March here on Sunday, and that's typically when we start to focus more on, of course, the plantings report here at the end of that month, and of course, spring weather is right around the corner. I think one of the concerns we're going to have, especially in parts of the Corn Belt, is, you know, even from central Illinois south, is that not a lot of anhydrous got put on last fall, not a lot of field work got done with some of the later harvest. So if we're going to plant some of these corn acres upwards of 90 million acres, which some of the private trades are looking at right now, we're going to have some weather break here quickly so that some of this spring prep work can get done here, so that some of this corn can get planted in a timely manner. But, you know, as the calendar turns March, I think we're going to focus a little more on that. But I think, you know, the market's aware that there's a lot of cash corn to move. $4 cash is a popular number that a lot of producers would like to see, you know, out of the elevator, and that continues to kind of keep a lid on corn futures here as we try to rally up to that 390 futures on March corn. Every time we get close to that, the market quickly kind of peels off. So I think there's some knowledge there that there's some grain that would move if we get up to that kind of level.
Bill, there are a lot of ifs involved in new crop and new crop futures because none of that has taken place yet. That probably means that technicals will drive some of it. You mentioned those as a driver. I think maybe of both old and new crop potentially. What do you see?
You know, I think realistically from the new crop in particular, that $4 mark was resistance for quite a while, and then it became support, and how that plays out going forward is going to be real pivotal. You know, when you're sitting here right now looking at a 410, we're right in the middle of the road. That's right about where your crop insurance price is. So I think technically whichever side the market wants to break from that mark over the next week or 10 days may well set the stage on how March wants to play out. As far as old crop, I think we've already hit the nail on the head as far as basis is concerned, the guys would really like to have $4 out of the bin. And the question is, does the futures market do the work or does the cash market do the work? To date, I think it's been a really good mix of the two, depending on where you are. And that's probably given the technicians a really hard time because the futures market looks like it wants to do one thing looking at the charts, and then the cash market gets a hot spot here or some other place, or we get the cold weather and the river, you know, seizes up. So all of a sudden it becomes a cash situation rather than a futures situation. So going forward, you know, I think right now the technicals are a little bit of a hodgepodge of different things going on, and the cash market is trying to express itself, new crop in particular. You know, the upside bias for longer term with a tighter acreage scenario still exists, but right now it's not overly pronounced. Flipping it over and looking at the beans, you know, when you saw $10 beans this week, you probably got some new crop sales with that mark at hand that didn't last very long. The question is, can we go back up and stay in that range for a longer period of time? When you think about how long we spent above $10 with old crop between, you know, that $10 mark and $10.50, it was quite a while, even when plenty of beans were available to the market. The market broke down with South America basically coming online and putting together pretty good production numbers. Now that they're into harvest, the market doesn't seem to want to break down very bad. In fact, it's starting to recover some. Is the fair value for beans right now going to express itself as a 10 to 10.50? We tend to think probably not, at least not for an extended period of time. But on the other hand, technically, the market's trying to stretch its legs to that $10 mark again. So we'll have to let the market tell us this as we enter into March.
Dale, I know you do a lot of research. What things have you been looking at in these last couple of months that you find of most interest in the commodity markets? And you can pick whichever commodity you'd like to talk about, whether that be agricultural or energy or some other commodity.
You know, the one thing in terms of the corn and the beans, you know, I think we often lose sight, you know, where we are in this bigger picture. And I would argue that, you know, $3, $3.50 is arguably the low side of the bigger range the corn market's working within now. The second part of it, the high side's up there at $8, give or take. And so I think people too often forget, you know, where we are in this bigger range and trying to understand, you know, really what fair value is. If I remember right, the study Darrell Good and Scott Irwin did on New Era prices, they were somewhere around 460 on corn, and I think the beans, they were over $11. And the bean range, I would argue, is probably a $9 to somewhere upwards of about 15 to 17 on the high side. So, you know, stuff is not expensive, and I think that gets lost on people, and that the grain market and grain prices are not expensive. And I think well illustrated by the fact, when you look at what's happened, for example, in the corn market over the course of last summer, you know, we had nearby corn futures rally, let's say from, I think the low was 318 upwards to roughly just shy of the $4 mark. At the same time, we had the dollar rally from 85 to here we are today at 95. And, you know, that really illustrates a point. And, you know, the dollar strength is not all that important as some people want to make it out to be. It's a good thing to play with on any given day for trading when there isn't anything else. But grain is relatively cheap, and I think people lose that.
Turn your attention, Dale. I'll stay with you because I think this is the topic you suggested we discuss, and I'm sure everybody has a thought on it, but we'll start with you. That's the Prospective Plantings Report that's due out at the end of the month, March the 31st. USDA's Ag Forum took a stab at it last week. They settled on, what, 83.5 million acres, I think, for soybeans, which is a low ball number by most accounts. Can you tally up that kind of figure? Although they had a pretty high actual average yield across those acres, and the total amount of production.
The yields that they used at the Outlook Forum basically are derivations or the trend-adjusted yields and numbers that you really can't argue with at this point in time. But the acreage thing, the one thing I think it's been lost on people, and I've looked at all the major corn areas, so let's just say every acre east of the Rocky Mountains, and you know, everybody seems to forget last year when you look at the total acreage, what, you know, plantings, prevent plants, CRP, everything east of the Rockies all crops, we were down almost 3 million. And here we are coming in again this year with significantly lower crop insurance guarantees. You know, we're going to be about 415 or so on corn, beans. We're going to be about, oh, probably 970 and wheat, if I remember right, last fall we were about 530. You know, those are low prices, and people lose sight of the fact that, you know, a lot of the land that came in, especially in the Western Corn Belt and in the South, where we had a lot of acreage come in, it was land that came out of the CRP program. It's low-quality land, and I'm sorry, the economics just don't favor planting all of that land again, and I think we're going to lose total acres again. I've been saying 84 million acres of beans all winter.
What have you said for corn?
I was actually just a little bit above the USDA. I think I'm around 89.5.
And 80, and they're at 89.
They're at 89 even.
89 even. Okay.
So, you know, those are small change, you know, in the mix necessarily at this point. But I think the point is, you know, the impact crop insurance guarantees are having, I think people just don't readily understand it. I related it a lot going back to the same impact that we had with set-asides back in the late 70s and early 80s.
Yeah, so if the numbers just aren't there, they won't plant. Not only won't they plant it to corn or soybeans, they just won't plant the acres to anything. Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't be surprised that the total acreage mix this year wouldn't drop somewhere, man, let's say, another 4 million acres.
And USDA has it down 3.3 across the eight primary commodities.
Yeah, it was back in, I don't remember the exact year, I think it was 2010, we actually on 1 year in total acreage package lost over 5 million acres.
You've been considering this too, I'm sure, Bill. What are you hearing from clients, and do you think that the outlying areas outside of the primary Corn Belt counties in the United States will shy away from planting acres?
Most assuredly. I think a couple, three things work into the mix. One is a lot of our guys, you know, farming Kentucky, Tennessee ground that really got pulled into corn production over the last several years have come back and said, you know, corn does not pencil out. It's not in my rotation. And they've got an extensive rotation. Some of them have five or six crops that they work into the mix. And corn has been removed from that for most guys, unless they're, you know, in the more corn-prone areas like the southwestern Kentucky. Also, you got to keep in mind that up in the north, the central north, you know, in the Dakotas, a lot of those elevators still have a bunch of corn in them. They have not been able to unload that. And with their basis at a dollar under at best, you know, they're not going to plant any corn this year. So those acres are going to be reduced. Some of them will probably go fallow while others make a shift to another commodity like sunflowers or whatever the case may be. But, yeah, I think the overall acreage reduction in corn is definitely going to take place. And as far as an overall reduction and loosening of some crop areas, we're exactly right. There are some areas that probably will not get planted this year simply because the economics just don't support it.
Do you think, Aaron, that the market senses this at this point, and that's why prices have not failed so much in new crop?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, especially when you start running some of the balance sheet numbers at 88, 89 million acres on corn, you know, the ending stocks number does start to tighten up a little bit. The USDA Ag Outlook Forum showed that, you know, into 1.6.5, somewhere around that billion bushels. You know, you start backing off yield estimates down in the lower 160s, and then all of a sudden you're talking about carryouts equal to about a month's use of demand right now. So, you know, that probably offers some continued support in these corn here above $4 for the short term anyway. I think if the weather continues to cooperate, or it does cooperate, obviously hard to say that now when it's snowing and below normal temperatures, but if we do start to shaping up here at the end of March and this April, May, is a little warmer than average, which is some of the hints right now and some of the weather models. I still think we'll find a few more corn acres, and I'm looking for a number a little closer to 90 when it's all said and done, Todd.
You know, I thought it was interesting, the IGC, International Grains Council's numbers released out today. The corn number in particular, they were projecting first out of the chute a world grain crop of 938 million tons, and that basically could eliminate as much as about three-fourths of the ending stock increase we've had over the last two seasons around the world. And that really dictates, you know, $4 corn, we don't have enough risk premium in this market yet. But when you start, you know, looking at that and prices at these levels, you arguably can't really reduce expected demand base much of any at all, because prices aren't high at this juncture. And you end up, you know, producing roughly about, I think it was 36 million ton less than what we might consume in the coming crop year. And, you know, then you start moving your ending stocks back down towards, let's say, the 120 million ton territory or thereabout world as a whole. And, you know, you're really starting to move those stocks use ratios back down to a level where people go, well, you know, we really can't afford to have a crop problem. And when you look at $4 December corn, for example, you start to question, do we have enough or any risk premium in the market at this point, considering we don't know anything about a crop yet?
Hmm. And are you of the mind that we don't have any risk premium in the marketplace at this time for new crop corn?
I don't think there's much. There's some, but I don't think there's that much.
How about the rest of you, Aaron?
Yeah, I guess probably not quite as friendly on the market maybe as Dale is. You probably got some argument there that market probably needs to, you know, add a little bit more here as we move into the spring weather. But, you know, at this point, if you're planning kind of a normal growing season, which a lot of the weather forecasters are kind of hitting at that right now, I think it's still going to be hard to get much above that, you know, 430, 440 mark, at least into the springtime, which brings us kind of back to that old recent high around 440 in Dease corn. And I guess knowing what I know today, I would say that'd be kind of a tough nut to crack here moving forward.
And you, Bill Gentry, you think there is or is not enough risk premium built
in? Yeah, I would say right this minute there probably is enough. And when you ask that question, what it does is makes me look and see, you know, what price do I really expect given, let's say, the acreage numbers and a reasonable production season, and let's say just even a tight 1.5 billion bushel carryout projection for late summer. I don't think you're going to be at these type price levels. So what we really do is, in our estimation, probably have about a 50 to 70% ultimate risk premium against a large crop. And then that will be whittled down if the factors of production get knocked down in right order. So right this minute, we probably don't have much extra risk premium. But do we have risk premium against a good size crop or a large crop? We probably do. So, yeah, I think it's fair. If we happen to run into some issues, do we have upside potential? Most assuredly. Our hunch is that if the market gets spooked to any real degree, you know, 425, 450 corn can't be ruled out by any stretch. Can I market against that? Cautiously.
Okay, so you mentioned the word tight. And 1.5 billion as the carryout. So I want to get from each of you what you think midpoint might be. And this is for corn only, but midpoint in terms of the way Daryl and Scott had thought about, and that Dale mentioned up front, pricing. They are, as Dale mentioned, at $4.60 or thereabout for cash price for corn. And I have asked Daryl this, I think about a 1.5 billion bushel carryout. So the question is 1.5, and I know these things move around year in and year out, but is 1.5 a midpoint carryout? Is 1.2 a midpoint carryout? Obviously 1.7 or 1.8 must not be. So what kind of numbers, Dale, have you pinged these a little bit and thought about where these new plateaus really might be?
Well, I haven't really thought so much about where a midpoint in a carryout is might end up being, but the attitude I've generally played with is if we see any indication that the new crop carryout could be under 1.5, then the market starts to get nervous, and I think the market says 413, 4.25, these futures not nearly high enough.
Aaron?
And just in the numbers we run, or at least the ones I present at a lot of these producer meetings, is, you know, using a 165 yield, which is just shy of what the USDA used last week, puts us at ending stocks right around 1.6. So not too far off that 1.5. So I would say that's kind of the ballpark number here for a midpoint is 1.6, and we'll see which side of that we end up falling on. But obviously, these projections have a lot of moving parts. A lot of things are going to change here as we flesh them out as the as the season goes on. But, you know, 1.6 or 1.65 yield is kind of the benchmark, at least in the middle range that we're looking at.
And finally, Bill Gentry.
Yeah, I think that 1.5 is a very good threshold to be looking at, because if you get below 1.5, the market is going to be increased sensitive to adverse conditions, and that would probably open up the prospects of a move above that 420, 425 mark. And on the flip side, if you come in with a yield that's really crowding record and looking really, really good, then going, you know, above that 1.5 crowd and 2 billion bushels is definitely going to put the market under duress. So I think that 1.5 billion bushel is a good fulcrum for that teeter-totter of discussion.
Okay, time for a final word. I thank Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities. We should start with you today.
Sure. No major statements to speak of. I would say that most of these guys looking for a good spring, our soil conditions are really, really cold and frozen. And if we don't get a good warm-up, spring is not going to come as early as it may have come in the past. And we're really cognizant of that fact.
Aaron Curtis of Medco out of Bloomington, Illinois.
I think this is a good reminder to continue to look at offers here as we move forward, especially on some of this old crop. Seems like we come in the morning, sometimes the market's up. The time we open back up at 8:30 again, the market tends to fade. So I just remind producers to kind of look at offers. You got some prices you like, put those offers in, because they can get hit overnight pretty quickly when you're trying to get some sleep.
And Dale Durkles from AgriVisor out of Bloomington.
You know, I'm keeping my eye on the crude oil market as well as commodity indices. They've given off some initial signs anyway that the early month lows might end up being important cyclic lows. What we really need to see is them confirm that their trends are turning up. We just haven't done it yet.
Our guests this week on the February 26th edition of Commodity Week included Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, and Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC, also out of Bloomington, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a very good week.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.